Don't have black alloys.
Yes. Yeah.
You can't. You're not parking properly. I don't know what the hell's going on. But it's not for you. It's not for everybody. I know you have a little touch up here and there. You've got to look after them. It looks terrible. I mean, look, I love the sound of a V10 engine. We'll be ready to go as soon as F1's ready to go. So when they're ready, we'll be ready. As long as they beat Lovejoy, I'm happy.
Oh.
Tell them I said that.
Hello and welcome to Fueling Around. I'm Vicky Butler-Henderson.
And I'm Dave Vitti, bringing you the very best in motortainment every single week. Fueling Around is brought to you by Adrian Flux, the UK's largest specialist insurance broker, who will tailor a quote to your exact needs, helping save you money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance.
Please press subscribe on YouTube so that you never miss an episode. And also follow us on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from. Now then, our special guest this week is a man who I think has got the best job in the world this side of being a racing driver. He jets around the world from one glamorous location to another, wearing chinos, sipping martinis, and watching Formula One at close range. He is Mr. Steve Jones.
Thank you very much. What an introduction. I feel like James Bond.
Well, I mean, you look a little like James Bond.
You do.
And you would be in my short list at most points for the next 007.
I cannot act. I'm aggressively me. I don't do anything else.
Okay.
So it wouldn't work, unfortunately, unless you want like 007.
Oh, well, there was a Welsh Bond.
Timothy Dalton.
Yes.
Was he Welsh?
Yes, yeah. But he didn't do it with a Welsh accent.
No, he definitely didn't.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Roger Moore very much played himself. So you could, you know, you could do it.
I don't think it's the silliest idea. But anyway, Steve, thank you very much for joining us.
You're
welcome.
Very welcome.
I know that interviews aren't really your sort of thing, so we feel privileged that you're here. You were actually, believe it or not, you were, if not the first, you were one of the first guests ever on Fueling Around, believe it or not, 6 years ago, back in 2020.
It cannot be true.
It is true.
If you told me it was 2 years or even 18 months, I believe you. 6 years.
6 years ago in 2020, we were right in the depths of the pandemic. And at that point, everything was off the road, obviously, because of the pandemic. 6 years on, one would assume that everything was all back to normal in terms of the F1 schedule. And here we have find ourselves. Stuff has happened and you're off the road again.
Yeah.
While frustrating, have you quite enjoyed the impromptu 5-week break?
Well, by the end of it, it'll be almost 2 months.
Oh, really?
I tend not
in
to do...
In terms of your schedule?
In terms of my schedule, yes. I tend not to do the Americas because they're late night. So they're what we call on Channel 4 low-spec shows where it's 5 minutes before qualifying, 5 minutes after, the same for the race. I don't do those. I'd rather be in the paddock. So that's why I only do Las Vegas, because we're always there. So what I'm trying to say is it'll be 2 months.
Wow.
Until I'm back in the saddle in Monaco. So it's a bit of a weird one, but I'm filling my time with lots of other exciting, fun things, hence being here.
Absolutely.
We're very, very pleased to have you. And you've also been writing a book.
Well, I've been writing a few books.
Yeah, so you've got your second one here with us today.
Oh, what, you mean this book?
This one here, which Steve says that he brought along for a friend whom he's seeing later.
Outrageous. I honestly had this book in my hand and Vicky said, oh, what are you reading? And I said, well, I'm not reading it. It's my book because I'm seeing a friend later and I promised him I would bring a copy of my...
Do you need the Sharpie to sign it?
In no way do I subscribe to this. I didn't want this to happen, but now it's happening. I'll take it.
Mm. Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah. So this is your second book, isn't it?
That's my second book that came out, I think, a couple of years ago now, 2024. It's called The Last Laugh Club, and it's about a group of murderous chemo patients.
Okay.
So it's got a bit of an edge. Mm.
Ooh, mm. Yeah.
It's a lot of murder in there.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of people on their last nerve, if you like, who just have enough of everything and decide to go on a murderous rampage. So it's a black comedy.
Yeah.
but it's there. The Last Laugh Club, if you fancy getting a copy.
Perfect.
So, I mean, is this something that you write when you're on the road? Because one would assume that you'd look at your schedule. I mean, I know that you don't do all the races, but you look at your schedule generally over the course of the 12 months and you think, blimey, Steve Jones is here, there and everywhere. However, does it afford you downtime in hotels around the world where you can actually do your writing?
That's exactly how it all started. I mean, my first book, Call Time, which came out a few years ago now, I decided to write that on a plane traveling to Australia. I had like, what, 19 hours? No, 17 before going to Perth and another 5 down to Melbourne. And I started thinking, how can I utilize this time? I know there'll be lonely hotel rooms at the end of this flight. How can I utilize my time on Formula One outside of the paddock? And I decided to start writing. Mm-hmm. And I really haven't stopped. I've got another one coming out next year. So it's just been, I don't know, a really, really great thing to do because I never feel like I'm wasting my time, you know?
Is the next one Murder in the Pit Lane?
It's there is murder in it. It's a classic whodunit. My next
love
one.
Love those kind of books.
This is the thing because my first one, which is about a guy who found a magic phone in a bric-a-brac shop in Soho and ends up calling himself in 1986, talking to his 12-year-old self to change the past to become a better person in the present. Kind of outside genre. Yeah. This I've just explained what that is. It's again outside genre. So I decided to acquiesce to Penguin and write full genre. So my third, really trying to get a hit book here, is genre. It's a whodunit. So, and I'm very proud of it. It's all done. It'll be out next year. So look out for it.
We will do. Back to F1. And 3 races have been done already this year before the break after Japan. Now, the teams I know are going to be super grateful for this gap because they've got new rules and regulations this year.
So they're all
trying to catch up on everything. But how much of a reset is it for you and the TV crew? And will you feel that you're having to sort of, you know, wind the big machine up again for another launch?
Do you know, if this had happened, goodness, say 7, 8 years ago, yes, I would really have to get myself back in that zone. But 11 seasons in, it's like falling off a log now. It really does come quite easily to us. You know, as long as you're keeping on top of all the information, then we'll be ready to go as soon as F1's ready to go. So when they're ready, we'll be ready.
Do you know, it's interesting because you just saying that just reminded me of something that you said last time you were here 6 years ago, and you were talking about the amount of prep that you had to put in, you know, and it was a big, big undertaking. So the fact that here we are 6 years on and it's a very different beast for you just shows how much it becomes sort of second nature and almost like muscle memory, isn't it?
Absolutely. I'm still incredibly proud of 2015, getting that phone call from Channel 4, asking me, do you like Formula One, Steve? This was Jay Hunt, the big exec there at the time. And of course, I said, I absolutely love it. Put the phone down. Felicia, my wife, was like, what was that about? F1, you haven't even mentioned. I didn't know you liked F1. I don't. I didn't know anything about it.
And back then, you couldn't binge on Drive to Survive because that didn't exist then.
Absolutely. Which,
that would have been a good ticket to have.
That would have been amazing, but I didn't have that. No. All I had was a collection of DVDs sent over of the 2015 season in its entirety, every single session. I just watched it all religiously, kept watching it, jotting down little bits and pieces, just watching it. And I ended up dreaming about F1. That's all I did for about 3 months before I was on camera in Australia with a mic in my hand, getting ready to present the Australian Grand Prix 2016. And it was quite nerve-wracking. That first show went okay. And I was thinking, I don't know if I can do this. This is harder than I expected. The next show was live in Bahrain. That's kind of what I do. I'm a live TV presenter. That went better than expected, but I got the buzz. It got me at that track, watching those cars, doing it live. That changed everything for me. I thought, I think I can do this, which was a good thing because I'd signed up to do 3 years, which was scary in itself. But that was Jay Hunt at the time. She wouldn't let me do a year. She's like, no, I need full commitment. 3 years or nothing.
Is there a car driving analogy here in so much as when you first learn to drive a car, you are thinking about the clutch and which gear you're in and all these different things, and you can't really have a conversation. And here you are 10 years into this role, whereby, as I say, you're not thinking about those different things. You're a live TV presenter. You've done the work. You've learned your craft. And then you can actually start to enjoy it.
I think it's a brilliant analogy. I wish I'd come up with it.
For your next book.
Maybe. Mm. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Don't get me wrong. I don't take it for granted.
Yeah, sure.
I'm still in my hotel room on my own the night before. I got to be fresh. I can't be out on the Raz the night before. I'm still writing my scripts. I'm still trying to make them as interesting as possible. I'm still trying to do things in a slightly different way to separate our show from everybody else. Mm-hmm. You know, it is Channel 4. We're a little irreverent. So I've always got that. And I do enjoy inserting comedy and like gags into our show where appropriate. You know, F1... It can be incredibly dangerous, and obviously humor sometimes wouldn't be appropriate, but most of the time it's a ridiculous sport and I love taking the piss out of it. And I love talking to the drivers and getting stuff out of them that a lot of other presenters, a lot of other TV shows wouldn't, because, as I said, Channel 4 is willing to go there. We can ask them these weird questions, which for me makes perfect sense, because if you don't know who's driving the car, what's the point?
Absolutely.
Who gives a shit? Absolutely. You know, what's Pierre Gasly all about? You know, what's Kimi Antonelli all about? Mm. We find out by the way we interview them.
And that's how you get invested in it, isn't it? By sort of knowing the cast and crew in this, you know, in this show that is F1.
Yeah.
In terms of the here and now then, Steve, you know, with the 5 weeks off, has that given people, do you think, longer to read and absorb and try and understand the rule changes? Have you been doing that? Do you understand what's going on? Because I'll be honest with you, I'm not fully up to speed with it.
And I've been racing since I was 12 and I'm befuzzled by it.
I'm pleased that you said that, because I just thought I was being an idiot.
No, there are certain things.
I like to think I do know them. I've studied it. I've read about it. But I'm not going to put myself out there right now and start quoting the rules and regulations. I think my job, the most important thing for me is being able to ask the right question. I don't really need to know the new regulations in and out. I need to know just enough to ask David Coulthard, Mark Webber, whoever I'm talking to, the right questions so they can give us, you know, the all the details. But yeah, I get that it's complicated, but I'm seeing racing.
Mm.
Is it inauthentic? Possibly. Do I give a shit? No, because I love racing.
Yeah.
I remember the dark days, 17, 18, 2017, 2018, just so miserable. There was no racing. It was so boring. A race would finish. We'd look at each other and go, Jesus, what are we going to talk about here? There's nothing happened. Do I want that instead of this like forced new regulations of forced racing? No, I take this over that because I love racing. I like to see cars overtaking. Mm. What do you think, Vicky?
I would like to see them racing flat out all the time without any lifting, coasting or fuel saving.
That
because
sucks.
In other championships, that's what you do. You race carts from the age of, you know, tiny.
It's
just flat out.
And it's dangerous as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Am I using the right word, clipping?
What is clipping? Please, you know what? You tell us what clipping is, because this, or super clipping.
Well, no, you're probably better placed, because you're a person who knows cars better than I do, because like I said, I'll say it wrong. But all I'm seeing is, who was it recently who slowed down? Was it Franco Colapinto who slowed down so much going into that? Going into that corner that basically Ollie Bearman almost died. You know, he just smashed into that wall doing like 200 miles per hour.
It's almost like a brake check, wasn't it?
It insane.
But so it was because they were harvesting energy.
Yes.
The car in front was harvesting energy.
That's mad.
Yeah.
I know that Carlos Sainz, who's the head of the drivers' union, has been on it saying that's going to happen again. You need to fix that. So I think it's good that F1 has time now to fix that.
Yeah.
Because God forbid somebody dies. And we've already seen an example of how it might happen. That's going to be horrendous. So let's not do that.
Yeah.
Do you think maybe they've kind of almost pushed this to the far extremes about what is feasible this year with a view to coming back slightly? Does that make sense? You know, because this has been such a radical change this year. Do you think maybe they're just putting it out there and then they'll sort of review it and then maybe come back somewhere and there'd be a happy medium?
Yeah, there are reviews going on right now. So by the time we start racing again, they start racing again, they should have evened out a few things.
Mm. You'd hope so.
Yeah.
I also read that it's going to be quite difficult to put the genie back in the bottle.
Interesting.
There's certain elements which that cannot be taken back.
Okay.
It kind of is what it is at this stage.
Mm.
It's the car. Again, I don't know all the exact technical details, but that was quite worrying for me. I don't know if they've dug themselves into a hole yet.
Mm.
So we'll find out when we come back. But there's certain things which are going to need to change. But don't change that racing. I love it. I just love seeing cars going around each other. And I also like to hear my drivers annoyed and irritated. Mm. I don't want them super happy. Oh, that was great. That was what a great time. I want them to be challenged. Yeah. I want them unhappy in those cars.
It's a sporting passion, isn't it? That's what it's all about. Steve, before F1, obviously, in terms of the career, there was T4, there was X Factor in the USA, there was Sex Box, there was This Morning. The last two being very different types of programs.
Yeah.
You can tell us about Sex Box in a minute. But
can I?
But maybe not. But the one I was thinking about on the train on the way in today was, what was that mad show? Unless I dreamt this, and it is wholly possible. What was that mad show a few years ago where you were driving round blindfolded family members in a blacked out van It was a property show, but it was bonkers. What was that?
Perfect House, Secret Location, if I remember correctly. Okay. It was a property show. Basically, I piled a family into a back of a blacked-out minibus.
Quite literally sinister, blacked quite out. Sinister, wasn't it? It's like a kidnapping.
It's quite sinister. I mean, they agreed to do it. I'm not just rocking up and slinging people in the back of a minivan. But I would drive them around the country. They wouldn't know where they were. So essentially, I'd show them an amazing property, and then they'd have to make the decision if they want to leave where they are to have their perfect house. Mm. But it might be on the other side of the country. It was good. I enjoyed it, and I did it because I've never done a property show. I'm at that point in my career where I've done most things. I've done reality panel shows, music shows. I've sport. So they said, "You want to do a property show?" Generally, I'll give her a crack.
Yeah. And Channel 4 has got a rich history, really, when it comes to property shows, hasn't it?
It has. You know? A lot of success. Unfortunately, this one wasn't a success. We did like 4 episodes and that was that. But, you know, I got to do the experience and I enjoyed it.
And did anyone take the house?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I think that was a flaw in the concept, to be honest. It was a lovely show and I really, really enjoyed it. And again, it was doing something, you know, the presenting world I've never done before. Yeah. And I felt challenged. Mm. You know, it made me nervous. It made me sick. I don't know anything about property. Can I do this? Well, okay, that tells me I need to try. So I did. Maybe that's why I didn't get recommissioned, because I was terrible at it. But
no, I enjoyed God it. But it was just really, it was really odd. I mean, but I mean that in a good way.
That's why I agreed to do it, absolutely. Because it was peculiar. You know, I mean, place in the sun seems a little by the numbers for me. But
it was when you would open the van door. When you would open the van door, right?
Get out, you slags.
Then mum and dad and 2 kids who were just all blindfolded and just being led around like this onto this sort of like front lawn, thinking, where are we? And it was amusingly sinister. Yeah. I don't know whether that's a genre, but amusingly sinister, I think, was how I described it.
I think they may still show it, because I think Channel 4 have actually got a property channel, one of those E4 channels, so I think it's still knocking around somewhere.
So there you go.
If you catch it, check it out.
Source it.
When you're not in minivans then, hoisting people around, right back to you, the beginning of your automotive odyssey then, what were your earliest memories of cars?
I mean, my father, I suppose, having banger after banger, he's one of those guys who kind of decides to go cheap and cheerful, but it kind of defeats the object, because you end up having 5 cheap and cheerful cars in the space of a year. It's like, Dad, just save up and buy a nice car. So there's always these bangers, these horrible old Volvos, some terrible Alfa Romeo with a big hole in the floor, a brown Mini Cooper, which again had a hole in the floor. So that's my earliest memories of cars.
Fair enough.
Sitting in the back thinking, is this safe? Mm. Yeah, so yeah, that's my earliest memories. I mean, I wouldn't say cars grabbed me right off the bat. I think it took me buying a car, my first car when I was 27, that then I started to think, oh, this is cool.
So if you bought your first car at age 27, what were you doing before then?
Well, living in London, I was kind of lazy when it came to learning to drive, because all my friends were obsessed with the idea of driving. So they turned 17, bang, they all had cars. So
this is still in Wales.
Still in Wales, in the valleys. So they just picked me up, and I'm like, oh, I don't need to learn to drive then.
I see.
So it was by the time I was 20, they were like, no, you do need to learn to drive. So I did, and I passed first time, and then I moved to London, and then it was years later, I thought, you know what? I'm getting tired of taking the train back and forth to Wales. I'm going to buy a car. So I did, and then I was like, oh, I actually kind of love this. This is kind of cool.
What was that first car?
A Renault Clio Sport 182.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Lovely little gunmetal grey. Yeah, little car. I loved it.
I had one too.
It was good fun.
Yeah.
Presumably the 182 refers to the BHP, does it?
Oh, that's a very good question. Yes, it does. Yes, because there was a 172 beforehand.
Because if so, I mean, that's a pretty pokey first car, isn't it?
The second was even more pokey. I decided to go full, I don't know, crazy with it. I upgraded to the V6, the Renault V6 with
the big fat
rear-wheel drive engine just behind you.
Nutter.
Two seats. It was mental.
Fantastic, in a straight line.
Yeah. Very dangerous on corners, sliding all over the place. But I had a lot of fun with it. But I decided to get rid of it. This is going to make me sound like I got the thinnest skin in the world. I was driving through Bayswater in it. And I remember this guy sitting on his stoop outside his house just started laughing at me and pointing. in this grey, ridiculous little car. And I thought, yeah. And at that point, I think I was about 30, and I thought, I should get a grown-up car at this point. This is a silly car. I'm probably going to die in it because I'm not even that good a driver. So I decided to grow up and get a Range Rover.
That makes me sad.
So, you know, for somebody who's obviously from, you know, the Rhondda Valley and Tylerstown, is it?
Yes, Tylerstown. That's where I'm from. I'm a Tylerstown boy.
But, you know, for somebody, because I would have thought that actually passing your test and having the early cars was all going to be a function of transport. But in fact, actually, your early car ownership and journey in history was all very much London-based, wasn't it? So it's a very different type of motoring. You're not going out on country lanes and sort of like ragging stuff around. You're probably sitting in traffic in Bayswater.
Well, but that's the thing. I mean, I was driving around London in the middle of the day as a TV presenter. I get weird, you know, weird days off. So I used to love just cruising around London down Piccadilly Circus. You go in the middle of the day, you can move quite freely. I mean, this is the early 2000s. So there wasn't so much traffic on the road and there was no congestion charge and all the rest of it. So I moved around relatively freely, but you're right. Mm. I suppose maybe I was nervous at the time to be driving around London coming from the valleys, but I just got stuck into it. I loved it. I've always loved London.
Yeah.
The first time I ever came here when I was 14 on a school trip, you know, looking at the curve of Regent Street and down at Trafalgar Square and looking at all the embassies. I remember thinking, oh, this is where I want to be. I've got to live here one day.
It is an exciting place, isn't it?
It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
It's phenomenal.
Can you remember the first journey that you took after you had passed your test? So the instructor says, congratulations, you've passed, and then you are on your own.
I mean, I didn't have a car. So that was like, okay, I passed my test. I got that done. I was 20. 6 months later, I was on a plane flying to the other side of the world. I went traveling for a couple of years. So I think the next time I drove was probably in Australia in a rental car. I can't remember where we were going, but yeah, I didn't really drive until that Clio in London until I was 27. So quite late to it in a way, isn't it?
Yeah.
And did that feel, I mean, that must have felt quite weird as well, because we always talk about the fact that it's that feeling of like looking to your left and there's nobody sat there, because it's the first time ever that seat is empty, you know, because you've never been trusted with this sort of, you know, deadly machine before. That still, even if you were 27 and had been several years later, that still must have been, it's quite a freeing concept, isn't it, is how I describe it, because it is pure independence. I can just walk out, get in my car and go wherever I want.
It's the best, you know, I mean... Yeah, with the Range Rover now, I know I can get in that car on a full tank and be at least 325 miles away from where I started, which doesn't sound great considering how expensive petrol is right now. But to your point, Dave, yes, bit weird having the empty space there, but I quickly realized, holy shit, this is a great way to listen to music. I'm obsessed with music. So this cleared a pretty decent system in it. So that for me was... music on, listening to, just cruising around London, just going back to us, listening to music, and that was the start of my proper obsession with music, just listening to it in that space, your own little, you know, pod.
Yeah.
Just being in it, feeling the music. That's where one of the things I love most about driving, even today, same deal.
You mentioned the Range Rover. We need to talk about that in a second. Quick bit of mid-show housekeeping first. So if you haven't already, please press the subscribe button on YouTube so that you never miss an episode, or press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcast from. So you are a Range Rover man.
Yes,
you've
I am.
Mentioned the Range Rover 3 or 4 times already now. And we were wanting to ask you, Vicky, please.
Yes. Have you still got the Range Rover Sport that's done about 1 million miles and you've probably spent £1 million on it, keeping it on the road?
Yes. spot on, exactly that. I think it's 135,000 on it at the moment, which isn't too bad.
2006?
2006. I took 2 years off. I was living in the States. Well, about 2.5 years I was living in the States. So it was dormant for that time. So maybe there'll be a lot more on it.
Original engine?
Original engine.
Impressive.
which is going gangbusters. I recently had it split. Have all the components underneath changed and re-waxed.
Steve, this must be a monumental financial burden.
Oh, it's a money pit.
It's
a money pit. But the car was reaching the end of its life. This is about 2.5 years ago. And I had to make a decision. Do I want to buy a new car? I couldn't afford a new Range Rover now. I mean, that Range Rover in 2006, I bought it new, it was 58 grand.
Yeah.
The current Range Rovers...
more than that.
It's like 120, 125 grand.
Yeah.
I'm not an idiot. I'm not going to spend that amount of money on a car. So I'd have to have a much lesser machine that wasn't supercharged. It didn't have a 4.2 liter engine. And I took it to Land Rover and I said, what can you do? And they're like, we can do this. It'll basically we'll give it back to you. It'll be a new car, but it will cost you 25 grand.
Oh, gosh.
Do you know what? I went for it and it's been driving like a dream ever since. And I think I'll get a few more years out of it.
Okay.
It's immaculate. It's spotless. It is pulling slightly to the right. That's the only thing. Just very slightly. No one seems to be able to fix it.
No tracking issue.
They've looked into it and they're like, no, there's nothing wrong with the tracking. I'm like, why is it pulling to the right? And nobody can fix it. So it's a little bit frustrating because it obviously wears on the tyres. But beyond that, it's still a dream boat. Still goes like a shovel. I love it.
Well, I know for a fact, and you mentioned it there, that it's in immaculate condition. And I can only imagine, because I know that you are not a messy car person.
No.
You like things to be in their right place.
And
You're very much of the same tribe as I am in that respect. I'm not sure that Vicky is, but anyway, enough about that in a second. When we spoke before, we talked about this, about things like temperature gauges and the air vents and all the other things need to be just so. Have you, 6 years on, have you relaxed at all from that framework since you've been married, or is it still the source of intense and at times crippling frustration for you?
You're referencing in the car that with the Range Rover, there are two temperature dials and I have to have
dual zone.
Yes, but they have to be the same. I can't have like 23 degrees over here and 17 over there. That's mad. Mm. That's madness. But at the same time, I don't want my wife ever to be uncomfortable. So I'll capitulate.
Lovely.
I will go to whatever temperature she likes.
She wants.
Sweet.
Mm.
But there is a term. It can't be an odd number. If she's like, I want it at 19, I'm like, can we split the? Can we go 20 or maybe 18? And she's okay with that, so that's fine. So no, in answer to your question, Dave, no, everything's fine. Everything's perfectly normal.
How are the alloys currently? Because I would imagine that since we've last spoken about this, they may have been refurbed at least twice.
You're funny you should say that. Felicia was driving through Windsor recently and didn't quite line up the car going around the roundabout and absolutely shredded the back left. I mean, and
I'm trying to be on her side and trying to go and give her comfort, but I can't quite. I have none.
It goes through me just even thinking about it.
The noise,
the whole thing destroyed. And we have a ring system. So I was in. I think I might have been in China at the time. And the ring system goes off. I'm like, oh, God, you got to, like, mute it. And I glanced at it, and there my Range Rover is on our drive. And there's, like, a different alloy on the back left of the car. And I'm like, what the hell is going on there? And she tried fixing it and not telling me about it. But I messaged her, what's going on with the Range Rover? What's happening with that alloy? And she said that she absolutely trashed it. But she took it locally, and we got it fixed because... to see a car with black alloys that are all scratched. Don't have black alloys.
Yeah.
You can't, you're not parking properly. I don't know what the hell's going on. But it's not for you. It's not for everybody. I know you have a little touch up here and there, but you've got to look after them. It looks terrible.
Now, you obviously want to keep your car on the road for as long as possible. So my answer to future-proofing it is to run it on sustainable fuel.
Okay.
Right? But... Formula One is being run on sustainable fuel at the moment. But for us mere mortals, it's not being mass produced yet. And it costs sort of three times as much at the pumps. But what do you think the future holds, particularly when it comes to sort of Formula One technology with the electrification and fuel research? What do you know down on the ground that you can tell us about for our future on the roads?
I mean... Look, I love the sound of a V10 engine. I even love the sound of the hybrid era engines. Mm. It's got a lot of guts there. Yes, the electrification of the sport is quite depressing, but I think we've seen with recent events that we need to get off that oily teat.
Mm.
So I think we need to, it's got to be electric. We have to remove the threat of what the Middle East can do to our country. We have to get away from that oil. So I'm all for electrification of cars. It has to happen. We've got to get rid of this oil. This doesn't work.
What about sustainable fuel, though?
I mean, I don't know much about it.
Okay.
What are you talking about? Like chip oil?
Yeah.
That kind of... Well, yeah, okay, great. I mean, I where is it available? Could I put that into my Range Rover at this point in time? I could just feed her into really. Yeah,
well,
it'd be fine.
Well, I know that Sebastian Vettel he owns a Nigel Mansell Formula One car, an old Williams, and he has put sustainable fuel sort of straight into it. I don't know whether it was chip fat oil, but it was definitely a sustainable fuel that with barely any tinkering at all to. That
and we still get the grant,
and he still went on it.
That sounds fab,
but the thing is, nobody is mass producing it at the moment to get it into the pumps because we've got all the petrol stations, we've got the infrastructure to take renewable, green, sustainable fuel. It's just a matter of, and then we can run the V10s and the V12s forever.
If it was there, I would use it in a heartbeat. I'm assuming it's incredibly expensive because you know, filling the tank of my ridiculous car is like. £135 endeavour.
It will be three times as much at the minute.
Okay.
I know. And if you can get hold of it.
But, you know, that surely, and, you know, what you said before about the fact that, you know, you've still got the same car on the road, which is arguably one of the greenest things ever, you know, but there's nothing
Passes the ULEZ too?
Absolutely. You know, but there's nothing more green than keeping existing hardware going, is there? You know, and actually, if you do look after, otherwise, what's going to happen? Everybody moves to electric. And then everybody's internal combustion engine car will just end up as being landfill, one would assume, if there's no way of converting it. So if there are ways of using synthetic fuels, and I say synthetic fuels, and I don't really know what they are, but presumably, as you said before, something which is in liquid form, which is able to be distributed through the existing system of gas stations, for want of which there are in every town on every continent, surely that's the most green thing in the world.
Ideal and better than electric because, let's be honest, none of us want to pull into a service station on a trip to Scotland and sit around for 45 minutes. That's mad.
I always think about from a weight gain point of view, it must be a nightmare because if you've got an hour in Toddington services or something.
I'm thinking some pasties.
Absolutely. You know, you're going to go, I might as well go and have a chicken royale while I'm here. You know, I've got another 48 minutes to go.
Unless we could in some way electrify the roads, it's never going to quite, unless they invent some extraordinary battery that just fully charged. But
there is a company that does battery swaps so that you can you can sort of pre-order, I want a full battery because I need to get home.
Sound very environmentally friendly, though, does it?
Yeah,
I mean, the battery thing is problematic in itself, isn't it?
Mm.
I like your, what was it, the petrol?
The renewable.
Renewables. Yeah. Let's
but
do
then
that.
But then there are issues about how do you make it green? You have to then make it using wind turbine electricity, blah blah blah. I need to be a professor to work it out, but in theory we need to run our V12s forever.
I maybe the whole, do you know what, any supermarket I go into and I'm looking around like a giant Tesco's, I'm like, this is not sustainable, we can't keep doing this. Look at all this food. How many supermarkets are there in this world? This cannot continue. How are we going to do it? So I'm a little part of me is like, smoke them if you got them. Just let's do what we can, live our life as good as we can, and just we're all going to accept that the whole world is going to just cave in on itself like a dying star in the next few years.
Well,
thank you for joining me.
See you next
time. It's just
I don't really know where to go with that, other than say that I think that just do better. Is that not the message? At the risk of being like an American kind of like kids show from the 80s where there always had to be some wholesome message, but just do better.
Yeah.
Like, we can't fix everything, but just...
Dave, humanity's not doing better.
No, I know.
Have you been to a lay-by in this country recently? It's just...
The litter!
Pile high. Any light I stop at, I glance out the window, it's just cans of Red Bull and crisps and it's driving me insane. There's no pride in anything anymore. No one gives it. Who are these people? Who are these people? I'm just going to go and dump my old leather couch in this lay-by. Who are these people?
I'm pleased that you went down the littering road, because when you said that, have you been to a lay-by recently? I wasn't entirely sure.
Well, that's the thing. You can't go dogging anymore because there's rubbish everywhere. Come on.
Okay, this next question doesn't fit at all, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Steve Jones, what's your worst habit in a car?
Worst habit in a car?
Because surely even you are capable of something that other pedestrians and road users may describe as being ugly. There's got to be something.
No.
Nothing.
I'm so focused on my driving. I don't touch my phone. I have music on. I don't think that is a bad habit. I'm very focused. Like, I really can't think of a bad habit I have when I'm driving. No, I don't have any. It's very okay. Serious. Look, you're driving around in like a 2.5 ton vehicle. Mm. I always say to my wife, be careful driving that car because that is your quickest route to prison. You hit somebody, if you're glancing at your phone, you're going to go to prison.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It is a lethal weapon. Don't fuck around out there. Keep off your phone. Mm. Keep your wits about you. Sharp as possible at all times because it's a lethal weapon. It's a very dangerous machine to be driving. So no, I take it very seriously. In fact, I firmly believe we all need to develop some kind of system where there's a lockbox in every single car.
I totally agree.
Or if you don't put your phone in there, your car doesn't start.
Honestly,
you don't need it.
The phone is the most dangerous thing, I think.
Yeah.
And I tell you what, as a you're an occasional cyclist, Steve, I know, and likewise I do. I don't like cycling on the road. I love going off the road.
You'd be mad.
I don't like cycling on the road because I can't relax because I know that there will be somebody in a van. I'm not going to mention any company names, but there'll be somebody in a van and you know, to be fair, they're under huge pressure to get those deliveries done. But I know that somebody is going to be checking their next delivery, thing like that. And before they know it, they go straight up my backside.
Absolutely.
You know, and it's terrifying.
Yeah. It's not worth it. I see it all the time. You know, you're on even the motorway, especially. Some are there on their phone. Some are looking at their phone.
Yeah.
You know, traffic.
It shouldn't happen.
Yeah, it's incredibly dangerous. But apparently, we're all like, "Oh well, I'm sure it'll be fine."
Yeah.
No, we need to have some kind of legislation in place and like a rule with all cars. Put it in there. You don't need it. The sat nav is built into the car. You don't need it for any other reason.
Yep. Here, here.
Yes.
Yay.
Now, if somebody could just do that,
exactly.
That would be great. Thank you.
No.
When it comes to cars, which of the ones that you've had would you have for the rest of your life?
I mean, it's the Range.
Yeah.
I feel it's part of me now.
I've
had it for 20 years. That car, me and that car just go hand in hand. I mean, it's one of the reasons why I decided to get it fixed up. Because my wife said to me, I can't imagine you with any other car. That's so you.
Aww.
And I can't afford another Range Rover. So,
that's
me through and through. I've driven, you know, sports cars and supercars, Lamborghinis and Ferraris. Always rentals. If I'm like, you know, we used to rent cars and drive down to Le Mans, which is a lot of fun. But, God, you drive through central London in a bright yellow Lamborghini Gallardo, you feel like a complete... head.
Mm. I love doing that.
I mean, it's...
Do you? Quick,
if it's a rental, but to own one and, you know, ride it in a soft top, you know, it's not a good look for me. I mean, maybe cool if a woman does it.
Well, sometimes when I am road testing Lamborghinis or whatever, and I will go and pick one child up, obviously, because they're usually a two-seater. And all the kids at school come out and have a look and I, you know, get them in and rev it up and stuff like that. Because there is something so amazing about it. And I don't think
not
we should
penalise... Not for the child that's stood at the gates waiting for the bus.
No, that's true. But I don't think we should be too harsh on those who own the cars because I love seeing them all. Fancy cars.
Yeah, maybe it's just me and I just feel like a dick in it. I'm not one for putting myself on
showboating.
Show. I don't want
peacocking.
No, that's not. No. I mean, look at me. I'm stood here dressed and headed to in black. I want to blend in. I don't want to stand out.
Black Magic Man. Dairy Milk Book. Which one was it?
Dairy Milk.
Or
because the lady loved Milk Tray.
Milk Tray. Yes. There you go.
Great adverts.
Before we get on to final question time, Steve, because I'm conscious that we've kept you quite a long time today on your day
pleasure.
Off.
Pleasure. Take as long as you like.
We need you to take part in our quick fire round, please. It's called 0 to 60, cleverly because you'll have almost exactly 60 seconds on the clock to answer as many random questions as you can. At the end of it, we will tot up the scores and we will give you a final tally, which you will be able to use to impress your co-hosts, DC and Mark Webber, probably in some, pastel-coloured bar in South Beach, Miami, when you see them next, okay? So if you're ready...
It's all about cars.
I don't know anything about cars. Listen, it's all about everything. It's just about life, right?
Yeah.
It's about life, okay? So, Vicky, if you can be ready with the first question, I need to prime the stopwatch here. Also, Your time will be up when you hear this noise.
Fantastic. Oh my gosh.
I love a horn.
Check our budget.
Right.
Woo, we've been splashing the cash.
Steve Jones, if you're sitting comfortably.
I am indeed.
Your time starts. Oh, hang on. Let me get my questions right. There we go.
Yeah.
Time starts now.
Bit of a cheeky one. In Formula One, 1 megajoule of energy can provide how much horsepower?
One. 1 horsepower?
Well, I think it's about 470 horsepower, but who knows?
Easier one. American muscle or Italian flair?
Italian flair.
Cream chinos or tailored trousers?
Tailored trousers.
What's your favourite animal?
Oh, my French bull, Frankie.
Oh, what was your first automotive crush?
It was the Lamborghini in Cannonball Run.
Yes.
Countach.
Countach.
Be careful how you say that. Who's your favourite Spice Girl?
Baby Spice.
Who would play you in T4, the movie?
Oh, it's got. There's only one actor with the range, Judi Dench.
Do you have matching luggage? And if so, what colour?
No, my wife's got a bit more flair than I have. I'm black, obviously. She's got green with cream trimming.
And that is time up.
No!
That is time up. Let me just tot up the scores, Mr. Steve Jones, because this is important.
Good questions. I enjoyed those.
It's important. So we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Wait a minute, what constitutes a correct answer?
Well,
it's our game and our rules, essentially.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm going to give you 8.
8?
Yeah, it's a good score.
Is that good?
Yeah, yeah.
Who's top of the leaderboard?
We haven't got the leaderboard yet, but when we do, I would imagine that you will be very close to the summit. Yes.
When we get round to doing that.
As long as they beat Lovejoy, I'm happy.
Oh.
Tell them I said that.
We will. So, time now for the final question.
Okay.
Please, can you tell us about your dream drive? I'm going to presume it's the Range Rover, but where are you going? What are you listening to? And how fast are you going?
I tell them I've actually done two of my dream drives. And they were both in my Range Rover. They were in my British one when I drove over the Alps. I can't remember the name of this crazy road, which is amazing.
No, the Stelvio Pass.
It was something like that, yeah.
Is it the Stelvio? Is that one?
We got over it and it was so incredible that you can go on a road under the Alps, and we drove it again. We drove it twice. It was unbelievable. In the range, extraordinary. My other favourite drive, which this is a long time ago now, this is back in 2011, 2012. LA is very, very different now, but I also had the same black Range Rover in LA. Was driving along the strip, listening to The Doors. Which track is it? LA Woman. Mm-hmm. I know it's a bit on the nose, but driving down the strip at nighttime, all that neon. Oh my God, just so cool. I used to do it regularly, me and my wife or girlfriend at the time. Just so cool. I'd recommend that to anybody. Alas, the strip isn't quite what it used to be. It's changing a lot. There's a lot of high rises going up there. It's not quite the same, but that exquisite drive, perfect music, perfect.
And are you steady pace or a little bit swift?
No, I'm steady pace. I don't break the speed limit. I'm very.
Yeah.
God, it sounds so boring. I mean, what's the point of having such a monstrous car if you're not going to go? Like I said earlier, that car you don't want to drive too fast with that, just in case if something were to go wrong.
Love it.
Beautiful. It's a perfect answer. I just realised, by the way, that I forgot to
do that at
the end of it. But anyway, that noise can signal perhaps the end of the show.
Okay.
Steve Jones, thank you very much.
Pleasure.
That is us done for this week's Fueling Around, powered by Adrian Flux, as the UK's largest specialist insurance broker. Adrian Flux will tailor a quote to your exact needs and help save you money on your car, your bike, or even your home insurance.
Yes, thank you so much, Mr. Steve Jones. And we will see you very soon on our television sets. And the F1 starts, well, imminently.
Imminently. Guys, this has been an absolute joy. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Thank you very much indeed. Don't forget to press the subscribe button on YouTube so that you never miss an episode. Or you can press the follow button on Apple or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Thank you so much for joining us. Until next time. Bye-bye.